Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 134. My name is Martin Obando. I'm one of your hosts here. Geeksters is a show where we talk about all things geek, from Windows to Linux, laptops, phones. Every now and then we will talk about 8.1, but one of our co-hosts has put a ban on that, so we're not allowed to talk about that.
And really? Who did that?
Well, speaking of co-hosts who put a ban on it, hey Tim, what's happening?
Man, not much, man. Who put a ban on it?
Well, I think, what is that, a blockade or an embargo?
Embargo?
Yeah, there's an embargo on 8.1 in the show, I guess.
Really? I didn't know that.
Okay. So that's why we can't talk about 8 today. We're going to talk about 10.
10.0?
10.0, because you know why it's called Windows 10 and not 9?
9's unlucky.
No, because 7, 8, 9. Oh yeah.
No, I heard that 9 was unlucky too, but I don't know what's true.
Oh, 9's, I don't know.
They were talking about it on Twit.
Oh, I've never heard that 9's unlucky.
Me either.
Well, anyway,
in Chinese.
Oh, in Chinese. Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Anyway, I'm doing good, man.
Good. Good. And the other voice of the hour, Mitch, the man. Hey, man.
Hello. Hello, hey, everybody. Mitch. How's everyone?
Doing well. I'm doing good. How have you guys been doing?
Good. Good.
Just good, not great. I haven't seen you guys in a couple weeks. And
my head's getting smaller. Look, it's not as fat.
Your head's getting smaller.
It's getting narrower.
I can almost not see it behind the microphone.
Narrower. I still want to lose 30 more pounds.
Oh, 25, 30 gosh. More pounds.
Well, don't lose it all off your head.
No, that's one thing. Look, I'm just almost 60 years old. I still look how much hair I have now. I think I'm good there. I'm
38. Look at that. Oh, well.
No comment.
Oh, I need a haircut. So what's been happening, guys? We missed, we skipped last week, so anybody coming out here live, they were sitting waiting for us patiently. It was kind of a crazy week last week. I'm sorry for having to move it to this week.
You gotta work, you have to work.
You had car trouble, too. You had all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man. That's why my week was so awful. Oh, I get a call from one of my clients, and they're an hour and a half away. They're on the ocean, coast side. So I drive out there. I fix them up, and one of their D-Link, one of the old D1, the 150, the kind of the skinny ones, dies. And so I move them all over, everybody gets up and running, and I come back, and I'm driving around here, and all of a sudden, not barely, not slowly, but all of a sudden, I have no power steering. And I think, well, this stinks.
Sucks.
Yeah, this really, really sucks. So this is Tuesday. So I drive it right down to the shop. And it's pretty early in the morning, so I get to the shop and they say, not a problem, we'll change out the power steering pump right now. So I work from the shop, and I'll get back to that because I want to ask you guys a question about that. So I'm working from the shop and they say they fixed it, not a problem. I go on my way and I drive around the block and it's still making a noise. It's making kind of a whirring noise. So as I drive, it kind of whirs up. And then I slow down, and it kind of slows down. And I don't know what the noise is coming from, other than the fact that I noticed that noise when the power steering went out. So I came back around, and they said, "Oh, that's there's fluid in the there's air in the lines that'll clear out." And I was like, "All right, if you say so." So I drive it home, and I drive it to another place, and I look, and there's it's leaking still. Mm. Like, well, that's not good. So I park it overnight. I don't park it in my driveway. I come out, and the street is just covered in power steering fluid. And I get in, and I have no power steering now.
I'm thinking the two are related.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So I drive it back to the shop, and I say, it's still broken. All right, we'll take a look at it. And I said, do I need to get a rental car? No, we're not RMA that, but they're going to go get another pump. And so this is Wednesday, my wife's off, so she comes, gets me. I go do a job. I come back, car's fixed, great. I take it off, and guess what happens?
Not fixed.
Not fixed. Oh my God. I drive it around that night, still big leaks. I take it in the morning, and now Yeah. So now it's Thursday, and I take it in, and the guy walks out of the back shop, and I toss him my keys, and I said, it's still broken. And he goes, well, we're going to need to do some research on this. I said, yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Was that did you take it to a Chevy dealer? Was that a Chevy?
No, this is just a third-party dealer.
Mm.
So they put it in the rack, and I go get a rental car because I got stuff to do this that day. And so when you leave a shop and they have loaner cars sometimes, or maybe they've got a corporate car that they have for the shop, mm-hmm. right? So I get all my stuff, and I'm going to go get a ride to the rental car place. And I hear, Ed, get your keys. and Ed is like 23, you know? Ed's 23, and he goes, all right, let's go. And there's a van in the parking lot, and I think that must be our where we're going to go. So I kind of walk towards the van, and Ed's not behind me. And I look around, and he's sitting in his car. It's a probably early 90s, stripped-out, lowered Honda hatchback.
All right.
Bondo on it. So he opens the door for me, and awesome. and there's no fabric on the inside. There's a seat, floorboards. I sit down in it, and I'm like metal on metal.
Oh,
the bar, you know, that's usually up here, I swear it's from a gym. You know, the iron, where they do the iron cross thing. It's like one of those. Like, and then he, and then this, you know, pipe on it.
I'm just picturing over the top, right? The slow movie where he's like, you know, he's driving that tractor trailer, right? And he's doing like exercises at the same time, right? He's got a weight machine, like, you know, exercise his arms while he's driving that truck. That's funny.
Well, so he takes me to the car rental place, and this guy, this kid, is like doing 55 and 35 in a 35 zone. He's got a big glass pipe on the car. I'm just sitting there. I'm just, you know, I'm the guy sitting there in my work shirt with my laptop in my lap.
Like, holding on to that bar, right? Huh? You were holding on to that bar, right?
So he gets me to the, you know, he gets me to the auto shop and or the thing, and I have to kind of like unfold myself out of this tiny little car. And then he takes off again. Like, bye, Ed. So that day I get a call. Car's fixed. I show up and they said, well, here's the problem. So, well, I guess it's a hose that goes out and then comes back around into the pump. That's all I know. You got it out and an in. Well, the in apparently had been rubbing, had created a small hole. And so as I'm driving, everything's fine. But if I make any heavy U-turns or anything like that, all the pressure just spurts out of this hole and dumps my fluid. So they said they didn't catch it the first two times.
Oh, unbelievable.
So I have it fixed now. It's working. And one of my, and this is a great saving thing, is one of my clients, her husband is actually going to be the new assistant manager over there. So I talked to her, and I didn't even know this, because she said, how's your car doing? And I said, well, this is what's going on. And she says, what? And then she gets on the phone with her husband. And he just walks next door, because he actually is a manager at another shop, and he's moving. So he walks next door, and I guess lays into them. This is a good customer. You need to take care of him. I know this guy personally. He's a friend. And they're, okay. So they fixed my car up pretty quick that day. And it was nice to get my car back, and it's working fine now. But
they should have credited your bill, though.
Well, yeah, I do have a bit of a credit on there. Oh, so
good deal.
I'm curious what it was they did the first time around. What was it what repair was made the first time?
So for changes 1 and 2 were just the pump. They didn't replace any cables. They didn't replace any pipes going in.
Okay.
And the repair 3 was pump's fine. It's this intake pipe something.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I got you. Well, you know, being in repair, and especially working on cars a lot in my life, you know, my own stuff, you know, I guess the default is to get really irritated. That's just human nature. It's like, you just want it fixed. But then again, it's like, this is what we do. You know, there's been times where I didn't get it all the first time. And you know what you described, you know, is that perhaps the conditions weren't recreated such that they were able to duplicate the problem. And that seems awfully hard to imagine, but you know what, you know, you said that actually it happens during, you know, like periods of like a really heavy load on that system where it, you know, really high pressures had to be created, like, you know, really sharp, hard U-turn. I don't know. It still seems like they would have seen that or found it, and especially leaks. But then again, I mean, leaks are tough because if it's doing it for a while, you have a lot of oil everywhere, and sometimes it's hard to see. You would think, hey, it's just coming from this pump where it is or whatever. So, but then again, the whole story is completely marred by this whole Ed situation, and so it's hard to give them the benefit of the doubt. Why don't they have some kind of people mover there? You know, something that instead of just Ed's car, because what if Ed had an accident? I mean, is Ed going to take care of that? Is the shock? That seems like it opens a kind of a that opens them up to a lot of issues there. You know, way aside from the fact that it just doesn't seem very professional to be. I mean, do they take everybody around like that? I mean,
I've asked to get a ride somewhere.
Oh well, maybe that's. Okay, I guess maybe so.
But it was pretty funny.
But it, I mean, is this where? I guess this is where you usually go then.
Well, this is the first time I've ever been there on a recommendation because.
Because you've moved.
Well, no. Well, I didn't move that far. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, where do you usually go before?
Well, so the mechanic I usually go to before, either I know he was divorcing, so I showed up at a shop long time ago to go to a shop, and his door was just completely closed. Window, I mean, everything was just gone.
I see.
And I finally got a hold of him, and he said he was going through a divorce. And so I don't know if he closed shop due to the divorce or closed shop before the divorce so that he could reduce his assets. I don't know. He's not there anymore.
Okay.
But
right. All right, I got it. So you needed a new place. You know what? Going to new places like that it can be interesting. It sounds like you got one.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. So now one of the dilemmas that I ran into though is since I had to work from there, of course, right? Is now I'm in a public spot because they have this whole kind of a mini cafe. They've got two Linux kind of all in ones on the counter that you can do. They've got free coffee and sodas and, you know, drinks and stuff like that. And so they said, hey, the wireless is this, and there's no password. Just jump on. Well, of course, if I'm going to jump on, I don't really want to just jump on. So I jump on, and I know they're in Comcast, and so I put in 10.1.10.1, and I get their Comcast login, like their login page for Comcast routers, and I'm like, well, this isn't good. So I don't say anything to them because I actually put it out earlier asking, what's the code for that? If I'm at a public hotspot and you know, because my job is to secure hotspots and sure. You know, I do coffee shops and, you know, do I go to them and say, I know you're fixing my car, but you could also fix your wireless and your hot, you know. I didn't say anything. I just let it be because I think the assistant manager, now I'll know the assistant manager who's coming over. Maybe I'll mention it to him. But I have a feeling that they're probably, their IT crew that they have that come in and does stuff, maybe they didn't do everything correct.
Maybe Ed didn't go pick them up.
Maybe. Well, you know, the two Ubuntu machines are in guest mode, which is cool. I like that. They're running 11.04, so they're a little behind, considering 14.04 is the new version. But, you know, I guess it could be worse. So, that and then just work on top of that. And, you know, going to the car and waiting for your car to get repaired and you had to go driving around everywhere, you know, that makes for a long and kind of a rough week.
Yeah, it does. I love that story. I mean, it kind of makes you think of, you're just like instantly transported to like Bangladesh, taxi cab or something.
I know.
Because it's all very surreal. But at the same time, it's like you're just watching on TV through the windshield. I mean, it's like not even real. It's just so far outside the scope of like your normal everyday life. And I don't know. I feel slightly uncomfortable in those situations, but I find myself at the same time very enjoying it. Like, you know, what would I have to pay to actually have this experience somewhere? I mean, I couldn't go find this experience anywhere in my life right now. And so,
right.
And you know what, the way you described it, I'm almost transported back 20 years. Like I was Ed. There was a day when I was Ed. And so,
what my car looks like as long as it's loud and kind of goes moderately fast.
There was one night in Ohio. You were like Ed last year.
Oh yeah, like I said, sometimes I have to recreate
myself. If you remember that.
I mean, there was a time in my life when I had a car with one seat in it, and that's the way I liked it, you know.
I mean, you know what I'm referring to when you like the scared.
Oh yeah, scared hey, look, the. I'm ready to do that again, man. Oh. Whenever you want, we'll go do that slalom to that parking garage.
Are you going this year, LLF?
I think I can get my times down. You know,
nice. Maybe,
yeah. I don't know yet, Mitch. You know, that's the way the last 2 years have gone. I found that success is found in just leaving at the last minute and
right.
Not even saying where I'm going.
I might do the same thing.
Not so, me. I've already got. I had to buy my. I've got my tickets.
Well, you're kind of far away.
By the way, can I talk about my upgrade?
Do it.
You know, I have this Netgear 8-port switch, and it's been, you know, every now and then I got to reboot it. So I bought this TP-Link. What is the model number? It is a. I don't know what the model number is. It's a TLSG 1008D. And it's $25. It had good reviews. And I guess I've had it up. When did I get it? It's about a week today.
Nice.
And it's been up. I haven't had to reboot it. It's not as built as good as the neck gear. I mean, it's not a metal encase in which I thought it was, but it's working. It's working right now. So far, so good. So
hey, it's not what the outside. It's what's inside.
Right.
Okay. Don't judge a switch by its cover.
And we're all inside, so it's pretty good.
It's not the steak, it's the sizzle.
There you go.
Or something along those lines.
You don't sell the laptop, you sell the sizzle.
That's right. You don't sell the switch, you sell the motherboard. I don't know. Anyways. You know, I've been using the TP-Link stuff for a long time, and I've deployed TP-Link stuff today, actually, and that was pretty, it was good. I like their routers. I've been pleased with their routers, the ones that we purchased. I think there's something going on, though. I think I was talking to Dor the other day. His is acting a little wonky. Mine's acting a little wonky. I think maybe there's a firmware upgrade that needs to happen. It just seems like for a while, this has only been on the wireless stuff. For a while, it'll work fine, and then it'll kind of just slow down a little bit and get a little unstable. And I'm not sure if maybe one of either the 5 or the 2.4 is having issues. Mm. So I may need to disable one and see what happens.
See, but, I have a TP-Link wireless access point, not a router,
mm-hmm.
and that's working fine. That was inexpensive too. I have that like on one side of the house, and on the other side of the house, I have a HP. I forget the model number, but it's an enterprise wireless adapter. It was like $200. Not that I need it, but I had it anyway, and it was
sure.
It was working. I had trouble with my Android devices working in N, like. When I first got it a couple of years ago, but I put everything back on to, from G to N, everything seems to be working good now. So
that's what I may need to do is actually turn off my N, because sometimes I notice that N has some issues. Maybe that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. With connectivity or just speed?
Well, like if the N is on, sometimes it has a tendency to make things go a little wonky.
I couldn't even connect to it on my Droid X when I had that, or my Razer.
So maybe I'll do that, because really it's just, I'm. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm very far. I don't really need all that much speed.
You know, I'm constantly, I don't know, amazed isn't the right word, but I'm intrigued, I suppose, that all of these handheld devices, some, and actually, take your pick, all of them, you can have a handful of them, all about the same size, either tablets, phones, whatever. And it's interesting the difference between, from one device to the next, how good the antennas are in them as far as like connecting to Wi-Fi. I mean, I've had a handful of phones, the Razer for one, that it has a terrible time trying to connect to the Wi-Fi. Like for example, if I'm in a garage and connect to the Wi-Fi, which is just down here in my basement, it often can't do it at all. It just says, well, it's avoiding a poor network connection. Mm-hmm. But compared to an S3 that is here, that it connects right up, it's real happy. And I'm just tablets the same way. A couple here do far better making that connect. I'm sure it's just, something to do with the antennas in them and the design itself. Of course, that S3, you know what, there's really not a whole lot to it. They're plasticky. It's got that cheap little back on it that pops on and off. And this, of course, these are pretty old devices now. But whereas that Razer, it was enclosed in quite a bit more material. So maybe that's just all it is. But that's something I guess I never really imagined getting into all this. But handling these devices, it's like there's a major. Everybody plays a lot into the user's experience.
Right.
And that's not something that you would really test.
Have you tried an iPhone there? How does it work when you're messing around?
iPhone 4s. I haven't tested 5 here yet, but I mean, not the 6. But the 4s, they do okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever done like a side by side test of all of these things. And of course, these are all older things. I
noticed the more apps I put on my HTC, not that I have a whole lot of them now, but. Sometimes something's not behaving. I got to kill it, and then I open it back up. It's fine, especially Chrome every now and then.
Really?
Yeah. But it's still a lot.
That's the newest, latest, greatest, fast. I mean,
for me, it is. Yeah. It's super fast. I mean, I really love it. But Dor got a new phone. I guess he got a, what's that one? That plus one or whatever. I forgot.
Is it the one plus one?
Yeah, I think it's what he got. Yeah. It's like huge.
The one he got. It's like this big.
Yeah.
Oh. Really?
No, I have no idea how big
it's big. Either 5'5", 5'6", or something. I forgot what he said.
It's like it's 8.5 by 11.
He deserved one though, because he.
It's like a wild phone.
You know, I think it's 5 by 5 by 6 or 5. I don't know, but he said he's just amazed of the speed.
What did he have before? I don't remember.
Well, he had a. Did he have a moto? Because I think somebody gave him a moto.
Yeah,
I might miss a few Android app addicts here and there. I just listened to the recent two. Oh,
okay.
But he talked about the phone. He really likes it.
My wife and I were talking last night, and she says, because she's up for a new phone, and she hasn't decided which one, and she said, so if I get an Android phone, can I still get all my iTunes music back on my Android phone? I said, of course, because I've already taken the iTunes music that we bought and, you know, ripped it out and put it in our music folder. I'm like, yeah, I can do that really easy.
Just the actual songs, not the, I mean, you're not going to put iTunes on there, right?
Oh, of course not.
I hate iTunes. I hate it on a computer. Well,
but she's asking about it. She goes with an Android.
Right.
So we wouldn't put.
I don't even know. Do they make it for Android? I don't even know.
No.
iTunes. I didn't good.
No, you just plug it in and drag and drop.
Yeah, it's why can't Apple do that? I don't understand.
I don't know. Speaking of Apple and things not doing things, Mitch, you got a chance to play with Windows 10.
Yeah, I don't.
Or X.
I don't think they have anything to do with Apple, but.
No, but I was just, I was trying to find some kind of segue, and that's all I could come up with.
Yeah, it came out, what is it, last week this time, roughly? I forgot what date it came out. The preview, technical preview for Windows 10. And not a whole lot of difference. I put it on an older machine, so maybe my experiences might be skewed a little bit. I put it on a Core 2 quad, and I burnt the image to a CD and. A DVD, actually, and it's taking quite a while to install. I'm thinking maybe it didn't burn right, but then it finally went on. And you got your start menu. Then it's got a little tile preview in there too. I haven't messed with it a whole lot. I was on a little bit yesterday. I still didn't install a whole lot of apps. You know, watching some YouTubes. It seemed like it was okay. You know, nothing drastic of a change to me between 8.1 and that. I like 8.1, actually.
Well, I mean, it's a GUI change. Other than you got an actual
start menu.
Like you said, on the it looks more like a Windows 7 start menu, but the right hand side is tiles instead of
they're small tiles, not real big, but
they're small tiles. But instead of where it would say your name and then documents and settings and printers and stuff like that, it has those tiles on it. And because I also loaded it up on a Windows on a Core 2. Right around, maybe it was a quad core as well. Maybe it's Core 2 Duo. Right. 8 gigs of RAM. Loaded up, kind of looked at it and said, "Well, all right, what am I going to do with it?" Went to 9.9 and threw in some stuff on there, but I have no idea what I'm going to be doing with it. But then I got a text in Google Plus and from people saying that be careful because the technical preview captures your files, keystrokes, and voice.
And voice? Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's why. So I started to whisper around my Windows 10. Computer. So, yeah. And I thought, what? It looks like Forbes put out an article that says, Microsoft collects information about you, your devices and applications and networks for use for those devices, applications and networks. Examples of data we'll collect include your name, email address, preferences, interests, browsing, search, and file history, phone call, and SMS data, device configuration, and sensor data and application use. And then they'll use their voice features like text-to-speech or speech-to-text where we collect voice information for purposes such as improving speech processing. So there's a link in the show notes, but yeah, apparently they're going to be... so if you are using the technical preview, the chances they have been maybe collecting some data on you.
See, I didn't set it up with an account. I mean, you can choose to not to do that, so I did that. So,
well, I just created a batch script that just, you know, from The Shining where it says... Work makes Jack a dull boy, something like that. The movie The Shining with Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. I just said Microsoft can stick it, and it's just really? Over and over and over again. And so maybe that's what they're just gonna get from me.
Yeah, I think it'll create an email account for you. But
right, I had some people show up at the door in a van the other day, but I didn't let them in.
Well, saying that's it. If that's what they're doing, then you know. Well, I'm not going to get upset. I'm going to use it to my advantage, and so
that's right. I loaded everything. I'll just
start feeding them misinformation.
Right. I loaded Safari and then iTunes and then everything Mac I could find that run on Windows. Everything.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I could find. Yeah, that's right. I'll be talking to my wife. Hey, baby, I really do love that 8.1. Isn't that funny how I go on about it?
He's from the Geeksters. We know he doesn't like this application. That's Tim. We know about him.
You just see servers light up, voice recognition, red lights. We got a match.
Zorak in the chat says the install size of Windows 10 is like 33 gigs, and the install size of Windows Server 10 is just under 9 with GUI for the tech preview. So I haven't messed with the Windows Server yet. Hmm. But that 33 gigs of just the install size, that is huge.
Hmm.
So I haven't done anything with it. Like I said, I've been on Linux for so long that I booted it up, turned it on, and went, well, now what am I going to do with it? Like, yeah, I didn't even know anything apps to put on it.
That's fine.
I know that Adobe works on it because I installed that, but I was like, what am I going to do with this? So I turned it off and put this other machine back on the bench because I needed to get some data from another box. So it's like, all right, so yay, Windows 10.
Interesting.
Silence.
I haven't looked at it yet. I mean, I've seen the pictures. I downloaded it, but I didn't get a chance to install it yet. So this week, I forgot that I should take a look at. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. Either I saw something shiny and got distracted, and
I was going to put it in the VM, but I said I'll just put it on that machine. And actually, it's my Linux box. Yeah, I'll just put Linux back on there.
That's actually been kind of a reoccurring theme in my life here recently, where I'll see something interesting, download it. Zorin was one of those where it was like, oh, I really want to check that out. Too.
I never got it done. Me either.
So,
yeah.
One of these days.
So I have been doing, one of the things that I really like doing, I get a chance to do this last week and the part of this week, was I have a client who, brand new client, from the ground up network build. So install the patch panel, the switch, the router, the server. I've got the server sitting down here on the floor, getting ready to deploy out to them. So that's always been, that was a lot of fun. I get a chance to kind of take it and do exactly the same. I get to take it and do just kind of a build up from scratch. And I always think that's fun.
Nice.
So they need some remote desktop and stuff like that. They're a company, and this is interesting. I may have mentioned before that they're a company who does 3D printing.
So they
don't do the little 3D printing. Like they have contracts with major companies for 3D printing.
So you're not going to go there and play with things and start.
I don't know. Maybe I'll get like a bust of me done there. You know, just a head. I don't know.
You'll bring him a bunch of Legos.
What?
You'll bring him a bunch of Legos.
That's right.
That's great. That's the first thing I've ever heard anybody say about a 3D printer, that it had no useful function. You know, it was completely self-serving. It was like just nothing more than just, you know, really, really self-serving iconography, where and self-worship. That's the first thing I've ever heard. It was just a thing.
That's right. I could make like a fancy pen holder. I could do some kind of clipboard, cardboard cutout thingy, put stuff in. No, I just want my face.
A bust.
Yeah.
I don't want, like, you know, some kind of, I don't want to print out, like, you know, a plastic handgun or anything, some really sophisticated thing that would cost millions of dollars. I could print for, you know, 20. I just want a bust of myself that I could look at.
That's right. If I can get like a whole bunch of miniature ones, I can like put them on top of my monitor. I don't know. Sorry.
What? Say it again.
If I could just get like the miniature ones.
Maybe,
and then I can just put them a miniature bust.
Yeah.
And then put them a mini bust. Put them across the monitor.
Non bobbleheads.
Right. But I could like maybe put a, maybe I could like attach them to a spring, so they would, that, so it would be like a bobble bust.
Bobble, a series of bobbling. Anyway, how big is this company? Is that all they do, is just this 3D print stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's not like just okay.
No, they're gonna have three, when it's all said and done, they're gonna have three giant machines running 24/7 making stuff.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, it's I'll have to ask them what I can and can't take pictures of. So it's that's pretty cool. Hmm.
Well, they could just print you a picture.
Well, maybe they'll just print. Could you print me a picture of this?
print you a 3D picture.
Yeah, a picture of you, and they'll make a bust.
Then I can like bust a move.
Oh,
all right. Sorry. I watched the 90s One Hit Wonders the other day and
stuck
in my head. I did get a call. So I've been working with another company that they are construction supply. So if you need construction parts, you call this company. They then order, you know, from another wholesaler, then they resell out. They use FileMaker. I don't know if you guys have ever used FileMaker before, but it's a Mac, or it's used on the PCs, but it's definitely from I believe it's from Apple. It's called FileMaker. It's a database application. I don't know much about it other than the fact that how to get it to work. So it was external. It was so in a different location. So everybody in the one client would just connect to it externally. Not a problem. Everything worked. And then I got a call saying, just at like 7:30 in the morning, I was on my way down there to do something else, but I got a call from them saying, we need you to bring a switch and a 2-foot Ethernet cable and 3 6-foot cables. Said, all right. So I think, no problem. So I start to get ready, and I'm like, wait a minute. They're all wireless because they don't have access to their own router. So they're all wireless. I'm like, why do I need a switch then? This is weird. So I call up the owner who calls me, and she says, well, the guy moving the FileMaker database, because they moved it internally, which I didn't know about. He said, so they moved the FileMaker database internally, and he says you need a switch to hook up all the computers. I said, but that doesn't make sense because it's not going to make any connection, because what's going to give the local area connection an IP address if they're just plugged to a switch? Because the switch isn't going to go anywhere because they're wireless. And she says, I don't know. Let me get him on the phone. So he calls me back. Yeah, Mitch, you were going to look like you were going to say something.
Oh, I'm listening. So it's interesting.
So he calls me back and he goes, yeah, so when I moved FileMaker inside, it couldn't find the FileMaker application on the computers. I said, okay, so we can just assign it an IP address and go there, because we'll need to, you know, we'll need to statically assign this computer now a static, you know, an IP address, so all the machines can connect to this computer for FileMaker as clients and server. And he goes, yeah, so you need to hook up a switch. I said, no, we don't need to hook up a switch because that's not going to work. Well, that works at other places. I said, yes, but they're wireless, and so you can't switch because the switch isn't going to get an IP address from anywhere. It's just, I mean, unless you statically assign, I said, unless I statically assign each computer's physical LAN port, not the wireless one, but the physical port, the Ethernet port, an IP address, then it'll work. But the problem is that the all the other machines are laptops, and the employees who work there take their laptops out to the field, or they go home with it, or they go to other places with it, and then they would have to turn on DHCP when they get there, yeah, and then remember to turn on static IP address when they plug in on their side.
Remember the IP address they had.
Right. And he goes, well, you know, then that means, he says, so then internet will go out wireless and everything else will be on the switch. And I'm like, but where does the IP address from the switch come in? And the guy was getting frustrated with me. And he goes, well, fine, just then, but it's not seeing the server. I said, well, file and print sharing may not be turned on. We don't have access to the switch, the router. They may have done some stuff to it. So he goes, okay, well, you just fix it. So I show up down there, and sure enough,
right. It's like, thank you.
Yes. So I go down there.
That's what I've been waiting for. Thank you.
Right. So
people just tell me that. Like, they call me, and then they say that. But I hate it. It's like, hours and hours later, okay, you just fix it. Thank you. We're fine there. Thank you.
Right. So I go down there, and of course I can't get access to the router because it's another tech company. Literally, it's another me that owns the router that this company leases, because they're inside of another company. So okay. I call the computer company there, and I talk to their IT guy who is doing another job, and I said, I've created a static IP on this computer. I need you to port forward 5003. You were told 5001 earlier. That's so that the FileMaker guy was arguing with me about the static IPs on a switch and where that's just going to magically come out of the air. And then he gives the guy the wrong port forward number.
Nice.
So I'm like, okay. So I said, I'm given a static IP. I need this port forward. He goes, all right, I'll get to it. And I'm on site. I can't do anything about it because I need to make sure that people, now the employees that are not on site, can get in to get their data. And the owner is kind of, this was all just done, and then it was kind of like, hey, Martin, we did this. I was like, so I kind of, I said, you know, if this happens, you could give me a call, and I can help walk you through some stuff, or we can figure out a best way to maybe plan this out in the future rather than hit 7:30 in the morning, it's broken, come fix it. And she's fine with that. She just said that she's so used to doing things kind of on her own by calling other people that she's never really had me and there. So that was a good compliment. But so it took the guy 3 days to do a port forward for me.
Jeez.
Because he said, I'll do it. And then I called him back and he says, oh, yeah, I'll do it this afternoon. And that was Friday. I emailed him Friday night, no response. I emailed him Saturday, no response. I emailed him on Sunday. No response. And the whole time from my computer here, you can actually, so if you ever need a port forward and you need to just check and see if it's forwarded, you can actually run the telnet command to that port. And if it doesn't ever answer, it's not forwarded. But you can run a telnet command. So even if I don't have FileMaker, I don't really need to make a connection to that machine, but I want to test and see if that port is open so it's listening. You can run the telnet command on that port and you'll get a connection. It won't do anything, but you'll get a connection. So that's a great way to test if port forwarding is working.
See.
So I finally tested it on Monday, and it works. So then I go back down, and I have to set them up there. I have to set up externally. It's all up and running now, but this tiny little thing that they thought maybe would make things easier turned out to be a little bit bigger than they imagined. It took 3 days for the guy to do any kind of port forwarding, and I don't have access to that router at all. If it was me, I would have just done it instantly. We would have been up and running. But
I'm gonna have to listen back to all that because I'll admit I didn't quite pull the pieces together. I heard chunks that I recognized, but the whole thing with the wires and this and that, and I'll admit in the middle of it I was distracted by looking up this FileMaker. I can't figure out even what that does. I mean, it just looks like I go to FileMaker.com. It looks like this really generic website set up by a shell company laundering money. I mean, that's what it looks like. As you read it, it all just looks very. It says a lot without really saying anything at all. And so I was going to ask you if you really. What did you interact with? Did you learn what the heck it is and what it does? It looks like it does a lot, but maybe it does nothing. I can't tell.
It is. It's kind of an all. And I have another client who actually uses FileMaker, so I've seen it in production in the past. It does invoicing. It does quotes. It reminds me a lot of ACT. Have you guys ever seen ACT before?
I remember.
It's so that you could do, you know, your client. You can put client contact information in there.
It's a cross-platform relational database.
There you go. Are you reading it right from the website?
Yeah. A little excerpt. And I kind of understand that because...
Yeah. If you go to FileMaker.com,
I love it because this is what it does. It easily creates custom business solutions for you and your team. That's what it does, which doesn't say anything.
Okay. So if you go to About, it says FileMaker is an Apple subsidiary, delivers innovative software to easily create custom business solutions for iPad, iPhone, Windows, Mac, and the web. Millions of people, from individuals to some of the world's largest organizations, use FileMaker platform to streamline their business processes, manage information, and boost overall productivity. There you have it.
See, anyways, you could use it for almost anything. Employees, you know, to get employee information or anything at all, right?
Yeah.
I think I've seen too much malware because it looks like the website looks like malware. It has all these just like, looks like custom images pulled off the web with very generic looking people that are happy because they've been successful using this product.
I don't know. They use it.
I was just curious what, okay. Well, it seems like an awful lot of trouble you went through for something that I don't understand.
They moved a database. The short condensed version is they had a database externally. They moved it internally and now they need to access it externally. And that was the other thing we had to.
I see. Okay. All right. So, that actually makes sense. I see that now. I get
right. And so the other thing we had to do was we went to noip.org and created them an account. So that way externally, because they have a dynamic IP address from Comcast. Yeah. And so we had to go get them a noip.org account so that way they could go to the name and it'll always point back to their local IP address so they can always get inside.
Changed. Sure.
That was the other thing we had to do. So I think the owner was...
Here's what I don't understand. If they're outsourcing wherever the router comes from to another company, yet calling you and That's kind of strange right there.
Well, there it'd be basically it's a business park. And so there's a router coming in, and the business park is managed by this other IT support, but they're responsible for their own IT support internally.
Hmm.
So we have to work together to make sure that they get the data they need and port forwarded correctly.
But like you said, if you had the access to get into the router, you would have been done. 1, 2, 3, you would have been done.
Exactly. And they've talked about moving before in the past, and they said, well, what would it be to get our own? I said, we'd have to get Comcast or Verizon or whatever to come in, put a connection inside your business themselves. Then we could run network cables and all that kind of stuff. But it was really just funny because the guy, all he knew was you plug it in, it works. And that's true. But if they're wireless, then there's nothing to plug into. And you just, he just said, bring a switch. And if I'm just gonna plug the computers into a switch, they're gonna get an IP address, the 169.254.something that shows that they don't have an IP address anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of a funny conversation with him. But they're up and working. I also learned that
you had a rough week, man. I feel for you, man. You had a rough week.
And well, here's another one. So this happened. this happened at the same time. I get a call.
Wait, therapy.
So I get a call, right, from a client who's using Outlook 2013.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Now, Outlook, so, and what they're telling me is that it's in offline mode. And so I know in Outlook 2007 and 2010, in the bottom right-hand corner where it says offline, you can actually right-click on it and you get a pop-up and you can uncheck work offline.
Sure.
In 2013, you don't get that thing. What you do is in the top, on the send and receive tab, in the top, there's actually a button that says work off or offline or something like that. Yeah, offline. And when you press it, it turns gray. And when you unpress it or unclick it, it blends in with the rest of it. It has that plain white flat looking to it. And so they said, I get a call at it pretty late at night saying it's offline. I said, right click on it, uncheck it. They said, no, it doesn't work. I get a call that morning. So I said, all right. So, I mean, it's right there. It's pressed in. It says offline, big red button. So I drive out to this company and I walk in. Well, first off, she's on lunch. I can't get a hold of her. Finally, I get a hold of her. I drive out there. Takes me, 20 minutes from where I'm at to continue out there. I drive out there. I say, here's the button right here. And I click it offline, online, all the email starts coming in. So if you're using Outlook 2013, the offline button is on the send and receive tab. If it's grayed, if it looks like it's pushed in, it's offline. When you click it again and it's not pushed in anymore, it's not offline. There is no bottom right click tab anymore.
How does this happen? And under what circumstances do you ever want that to be offline anyway?
I don't know.
Okay, because I've run this before, and it's just like, I mean, I don't think that anybody did that on purpose. Like, they had a good reason.
No.
And a lot of times, I think it just happens somehow. Something weird happens. But every version of this stuff, it's some different thing. I think was a live mail. Wasn't it tied in? I think it was tied into. You had to go to Internet Explorer settings to actually change these. I can't remember exactly how that went, but I've been spanked over and over and over again with this stupid issue.
Yeah, I don't know what caused it. She says she didn't know, which is fine, and I get that. Yeah. But I just thought it was one of those things where it's right there. It was pretty obvious to see an offline button. I'm trying to find a picture of it because it's pretty obvious. Oh yeah, here you go. I'll put this in the chat and I'll put this in the notes. But it's pretty obvious that the offline button is checked. I mean, so I walked in, unchecked it, walked out. And actually what was nice is my daughter came with me this day, and so she got a chance to see me go from place to place to place and actually see what I was able to do and just see that I'd be working on this one job and I'd get four phone calls. We'd be dropped to the next job and get other phone calls, and then I'd be running over here, and on my way there I'm making other phone calls to try to push stuff,
Yeah.
And so she got a chance to see, which was good, but I think she was a little bit bored because sometimes I just was working.
Yeah, it's just a little picture of a globe with a red X on it.
Mm-hmm. And if you were to uncheck it, it
says work offline.
Right. So
I guess if you like clicked it, the red X goes away.
No, I think the button actually comes out. It actually the button ungrays.
Oh, so the red X is always there.
It's yeah.
Could you just make that button? Can you remove it? Make it go away? Hide it somewhere? Remove it from toolbar? Or is it...
I guess so. But
oh, okay, all right. Well, it's fixed.
It's fixed. I just walked out and went.
That was like an hour, hour and a half of your life. It's gone forever.
Nah, it wasn't that bad. Maybe.
Oh, it was that bad. It just didn't seem that bad in comparison to all the air stuff.
Well, yeah. But my daughter, what was fun? Yeah, yeah. What was fun though is it was good because I had kind of a daddy daughter day, and my daughter has been aching to go to this restaurant that she heard on the travel channel, the food channel, and it's called Big Ass Sandwiches, and it's downtown Portland, and so we finally went. She says, "I really want to go. I really, really want to go." And I didn't know, but I walked by this place all the time for another job, so we go and we get there, and they have got their Big Ass Sandwich, or they have like the Gut Buster. And the Gut Buster is basically double everything. I was like, no, I'll just get the regular one. So I get the sandwich, and your choices of meat are turkey, ham, or roast beef. They put it on a ciabatta bun, and then it's like a pound of French fries and cheese sauce. And that's your sandwich. And so, you know, you're holding up this, literally, this sandwich that's probably 8 inches long and a good football size around. So two sandwiches are $23 for two sandwiches.
$23.
And we get done. Well, I get done eating mine and think, what did I just do to myself? My daughter eats half of hers. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I'm looking at the picture.
BigAssSandwiches.com. It doesn't look like that though. That looks a little bit appetizing. So I basically just rip it apart with my hands, because
oh my gosh, it's crazy.
It's a place I sure can't go in and eat stuff like that anymore. No,
well, I shouldn't have eaten that at all. There's just it's
it looks good.
Yeah. So anyways, I eat there. We eat there, and I ask my daughter after we're done. I'm like, so what did you think? She goes, nah. She wasn't that impressed. I brought it home to my son, who's 14, because he had the other half of her sandwich, and he's like, "That was so good." I'm like, "Well, you're 14. You'll eat anything."
The selling point.
They sold the sizzle and not the steak.
Yeah, well, I guess so. I mean, it's the size. You're going there for the size of this thing,
right?
It's kind of like when you see like the world's biggest tomato. Nobody actually thinks that tomato tastes any good.
Well, I was kind of hoping it would taste good.
The size of it, you know, but that's...
So you did like it,
huh? Amazing. I mean, that's what they sell. That's like their everyday... You would see like newspaper clippings of restaurants that would say, you know, come eat our like 5-pound, you know, hamburger. Well, that wasn't... But this is like just... This is what they sell. This is like normal menu. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it was busy because everybody wants to have a sandwich there, and I don't know. To answer Zorix in the chat room, he says you could change that with group policy. It's a standalone computer, so I was not able to make any changes to Outlook for that work offline in group policy. Unless you were talking about Big Ass Sandwiches, but then I don't know. That doesn't make sense.
Hmm.
Just kidding. I know you're talking about Outlook.
And you say it's just you just go in there, you just tell them what you want, one of three meats, and then that's it. They just throw like a ton of French fries and cheese sauce, and that's it. That's your sandwich.
Right.
Those are the options.
Right. Well, if you look at the menu, they've got, you know, the big ass breakfast sandwich, the pork hammer, the big ass French dip. Oh, why didn't I get the pork hammer? A quarter pound of each ham, bacon, and sausage.
The pork hammer.
Now I got to go back because I want that now.
The Great. Pork hammer.
I should have looked. All right. Well, now I'm going to have to go back. Big ass sandwich.
Oh my gosh!
Big Ass Sandwich review part two coming up later on in the month.
that's quite a what's secret aardvark?
But what
under extras you can add? You know they actually have They actually have things on this menu for 25 cents. What could that be? Extras, a side of secret napkins. Aardvark. What is that?
Napkins for 25 cents.
Does it say napkins? Because that's the one thing they didn't get is not get napkins.
I think I'm joking.
No, I don't know, but they did. I couldn't find a napkin, so I kind of like scoop up these cheesy French fries. It's kind of like, well, now what do I do? So,
I don't know. This kind of looks like a sleeve kind of place to me.
Actually, it was. the sandwich wasn't that good. So I'll have to go back and give it another try.
Wow, this is an awfully scathing review for this show. We usually take it easy on, you know, well, we don't talk about things we hate. Well, I do, but...
But we're not going to talk about
that. We already did.
I mean, this is definitely an extremely scathing review. I'll talk about something I love.
Please do.
And silence befalls the show. No, well, actually, I actually do have something I love to talk
okay.
about.
Okay.
I got a new machine here to use, something I should have had for years. I'm kind of kicking myself for not having one yet, but I finally ordered and received my hot air rework station.
Oh,
so
nice. I thought you meant a new PC.
No.
Now, is that just like a blow dryer?
Essentially, yes. I mean, that's kind of the way I've been describing it to people. But imagine if your blow dryer could be adjusted, you know, between 200 and 500 degrees. You know, you could adjust per degree. You could adjust the nozzle in the shape, the size of the stream coming out. You could adjust the fan speed, and that hair dryer would blow the skin off your face if you wanted to.
It's heat up my big ass sandwich.
But you could heat up a very small portion of your big ass sandwich. Yeah. It would be controlled. It would be very controlled.
So you now that's going to enhance your jack power jack replacements.
Well, that's why I had it, because right. I've really been fighting. I've gotten to the point where I'm really starting to fight some of these repairs. I just ramboed it for so long, and I was actually pretty good at it using, you know, very fine soldering tips. But I just got to the point where
I tell you,
I've heard enough people talk about it. I've watched these videos on YouTube.
Yeah, Timster has some nice videos up there. He's really good at it.
Who's that?
Timster.
Oh, Tim yeah, Kelly. Yeah, yeah.
Tim Kelly. I don't know if you saw any hits. Yeah, they're really good.
That's it. I just got to the point where it's like, well, I don't have anything left to prove. I'm just fighting this. And so it's, I don't know that I would necessarily recommend this machine over another. It just happens mm-hmm. it's the Kindle 853D. I got it off Amazon for like $140 or something like that. But I'm kind of speaking just for these hot air rework stations across the board. It's fantastic. I love it. I had I actually did a number of repairs of my own stuff that's just been hanging around here. I had a power jack in a Nexus 7. I had a power jack in the boy's got he's got a Galaxy Tab 7, and of course the difference there is that in the Nexus tablet, it's just a small daughter board you replace that has the power jack on. It's $20. It's like six screws. You unplug a ribbon cable, and then you slap them doing it. I mean, it's a 5-minute job, as opposed to the Galaxy Tab that the port is actually soldered to the main board, which is just so stupid. So I needed to remove the old port and replace it with a new one, and this is a hot air rework station. It's the way to go. So
you've been using it very good.
Yeah. So yeah, there's the wand right there, mm-hmm. and it's got replaceable tips, so that would let's see, that's the smallest right there, so you can really get a fine stream of air at it. And anyway, that's the one I had, and just heat up right around the area there. Well, I guess that I chose the temperature I wanted to use, and waited for it to heat up, and it started blinking, which tells me it's at the right temperature. But it's got a little holster on the side of the machine that set it in there, and I don't know how it senses it, but somehow it knows it's back in that little holster, and it shuts itself off, and so it slowly backs off of the temperature, and the air continues to run. But I suppose it's some kind of safety feature you put it in there, and it doesn't continue to blow that hot air. But it also just slowly eases off of it. It cools slowly, so it doesn't direct the elements in it. But and it came with replacement elements for that, and this thing also has a soldering station on it too. So it came with a soldering iron. It's once again is adjustable temperature. It came with a whole stack of fine tipped replacement tips for the soldering iron, and it's pretty fantastic. So, but yeah, just heating up around the fluxing up that port and heating it up. I mean, there's a million videos showing how to do this. Once again, Tempster, yeah, I mean, he's the man with those. It's a good place to look also. But heating it up, and there's a lot of small surface mount components around there. That's the point. You're trying not to heat those and wreck those at all. And if there's any chance of that, you can create a little heat shield. Take an empty pop can and just cut a little shield out of that aluminum if you want to further protect those components around there. But that was a happy day, man. I just heated that up. I grabbed tweezers. It even came with three types of tweezers, and I just grabbed the component, just lifted off, and I took the new one. It just sat right on there, and it worked. It was all nice. I was happy. So
that's
I'm cool. Loving that. Yeah, that's something that's making my life a lot easier immediately. So I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, that's something I've never done anything with that. So I've heard people talk about it, and there's definitely going to be in the show notes if anybody wants to look at that. But I mean, right now on Amazon it's $109.95 with free shipping. Really? So yeah,
I'll have to see. I'll have to check that because maybe they owe me some money now.
Yeah, but that looks cool.
Yeah,
I'd probably burn myself.
No. Well, you would only burn a very small controlled part of yourself.
It's like a laser.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right. It's like a laser. So.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
And there'll be links. Of course, all these links are in the show notes, so you guys can come look. So, well, since we're doing product reviews, I have been a while ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but we've talked about Open Mesh before. Here, and Open Mesh is the pull up their webpage, but they have these wireless access points, and you can. I know Liam Tidwell has been using them, but they make a mesh network. I've deployed them into coffee shops, and I think that's where I mentioned it was the one coffee shop where now it's a captive portal. So I've just finished up today, actually. On Sunday, I deployed one, and then today, this morning, was the last one for this coffee shop. And now the coffee shop and their three locations all have these open mesh networks on them. And so when they log in, they get a splash screen with the company's logo, some pictures on there. They have to accept the terms of agreement. Then they get logged in. Once they're logged in, then they get pointed right to another web page. Maybe it's the company's actual web page so they can buy stuff online. But all three sites now can do it. The owners can go to a web page. They can see who's logged in at any one time. You can see what the network usage is at any one time. And it's cool. I'm looking forward to using it more and more. But this was my kind of able to be my guinea pigs for these. And I've deployed three of them in little adapters. They just plug right into the wall. Two of the sites are using the Ethernet over power adapters to be able to transmit because the open mesh access point is somewhere not close by the router to provide best availability. And so I'm looking forward to that. And Captive Portal, the one thing I did notice the other day was Saturday, somebody sat down in one of the coffee shops and uploaded 14 gigs of data.
Yeah,
between the hours of 1 p.m. and 5 p.m., somebody uploaded it. Now, I have their MAC address written down because you can actually look at that. And the next time that MAC address comes online, I'll have to go and sit down. What my thought is, I would go to the coffee shop, and then you can actually one-click block a user. Block a user and then see who gets up and starts wondering why come their internet doesn't work anymore. And then say, what were you doing? Because they only downloaded like 15 megs of data, but they uploaded 14 gigs. So I'm thinking they were maybe doing BitTorrent or something. So the other thing that these open mesh will do, especially in like a coffee shop, is they can do, it's not tokens, what are they called? Like a ticketing system. So you go buy coffee, they'll give you a 30-minute token. You log in, you put in your little token key that you get from them, you get 30 minutes of internet. So it'll keep people from having, you know, maybe sitting down for hours and hours and hours and just sucking up bandwidth. You can limit bandwidth on these. So they're really nice, and overall they're really inexpensive. I mean, the cost for the parts with the little adapters themselves are around $100. Then you can get a case for it. I Dremeled out a little hole for the cable to go through. Yeah, no problems with them. So open mesh.
How would that work? I mean, you said token that, you know, you got like a half hour or whatever.
Right.
Like, how would that work?
Well, what So you'd go buy a coffee. They would go to a webpage. They'd get a little key. You know, they'd write it on a piece of paper. They'd hand it to you. You go sit down with your laptop, open it up. Then you put in your key, and it associates that key with a MAC address, and the back end says that key only gets 30 minutes of data. After 30 minutes, your internet closes.
I got it. But then how would that renew? Like, if you went, I mean, after 30 minutes, if you went and bought another cup of coffee, I guess
they would give you another ticket.
Okay. And so so it's not like your MAC would be blacklisted. It would only be associated with that first key.
Right.
And then it's not so like you have to wait a period of time for it to renew.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've talked about maybe doing something like that in the future and stuff. But I wanted to mention, you know, Open Mesh. It was a good.
Very nice. 14 gigs.
Yeah. That was a little much. I showed the owners and they're like, oh, because you can see it on the chart.
The entire chart is tiny, small, and means nothing. It's just like a straight line because right. it has to resize.
Right. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Because the graph has three lines in it. Like a. So the graph has got three lines in it. It has a yellow graph for how many users are online, a blue graph for downloads, and this red one for uploads. And there's a section where it's, you know, you get your uploads a little here, a little there, and then all of a sudden it just goes straight up and just flatlines for 4 hours and then drops back down. It looks like a tabletop. it caught my attention. I thought, oh my gosh.
It caught your attention.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Somebody got over there. You know what? It's funny because that reminds me that this guy was telling me that his wife wanted to do a factory reset on her phone. He's like, okay, you know, whatever, go ahead, I don't care, you know, because everything backs up to Google. He knew that there was nothing on there she was gonna lose, and if she did, it was all crap. So he gets the bill. He gets his bill at the end of the month, and he's like, why did we go over our data, like by 50 gigs or something like that? I don't know. It was something insane. And she wasn't at home on Wi-Fi when Google began repopulating all of her photos and everything else.
Oh.
And he was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, he thought he was going to die. So he's like, yeah, honey, I'll just do that from on myself.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah, so that's something to think about. I mean, usually you're sitting at home and you set up your Wi-Fi and it starts, you know, repopulating all your pictures and your folders or whatever. I guess she was at work or something when she did it.
All on cellular.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Yep. Hey, it worked. Worked perfectly. Thanks, honey. We got the bill. It went over on her dad a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get spanked for that, too. I mean, depending on your plan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Depending on your plan.
Yep. Oh, no. We went over ours, and then I had to make some adjustments to fix that. I've been using more and more of D7. We've had Nick on here to talk about D7. I've been using that more and more. Actually, last week, one of my jobs last week was a client who just, it was a, you know, I don't look for personal clients or for, not for personal, but like resident clients, but this was kind of the husband of a wife of stuff that I've worked on type thing. His computer was running slow. So I went over there and the first thing I did was throw on my D7 and then I can run all of these apps, Malwarebytes, Hitman Pro, I think I ran that. I ran CombofX. I cleaned out his temp files, temp internet temp directory. I reset the, like, things were just running really slow. So ran CCleaner, and I didn't have to carry any of those with me. I just had the D7, and I just ran it, and it just, one right after another, automated it. Saved me so much time. It was really, really cool. Well, then, and I left, and I wasn't there for very long after cleaning up his stuff, and his computer was running much, much faster, and I didn't have to go and download Malwarebytes. I didn't have to go and download CCleaner. D7 will download all those for you, and then install them, and then when you're done with it, it'll uninstall. Unless there are options to keep it on there. So that was pretty cool. I was able to go ahead and check even for rootkits, and you know, I did all of that stuff. So I've been using more and more D7 and how to get it automated. Well, last week after the show, no, not last week, the week before after the show, there was Nick released another D app, and it's called DMZ. And what it is it's the D apps member zone. And I just spelled member wrong in the notes. And what it does is, if you go to dsupportonline/DMZ, what you can do is you pay for this subscription, and they have a standard subscription, which right now you've got a 1-year special for $99. You get self-guided D72 personal training. You get the video series. You get custom apps, custom configurations. So when you're using D7 and you have a question, or D72 and you have a question and you're trying to figure out how to do something, like, because I sat down with their support staff and they walked me through configuring it, adjusting it, and making it my own, and they did such a great job. I was really floored by it. I learned so much, but the problem is that I'm unfortunately busy and I can't remember everything. And so I subscribed to this D Standard DMZ, and I'm able to go back and look at all of these videos and how to configure everything from them. They've made these great videos. There's the standard version, there's the annual version, and then, or the standard, the pro, and then the expert. And all of these come up, they're just the next level up, the next level up. Things like support and webinars that you can attend, personal Q&A, custom logos they'll build for you. So this DMZ is just an add-on to the great product that D72 is. And Nick has been such a great sponsor of Geeksters in the Podnuts Network as a whole. And so we'd like to talk with him about him and get people to use his stuff. So if you walk around with a thumb drive that has all of these apps on it and you have to remember to, you know, update your apps because CCleaner updated or Malwarebytes updated, all you have to do is get your D7 app, and it automatically updates for you because it pulls down the new configs. And so when you go to install CCleaner, you're not installing an old legacy version that's on your thumb drive. You're actually grabbing the latest one right from their website, and Malwarebytes and Patch My PC and all of these great tools, they're all included in there. So Nick, thank you so much again for being such a big sponsor for Podnuts. Yeah. Great products, and I'm looking forward to getting them back on again in the future and just kind of talking to us about what new stuff has come online. And they've got now support. You can call them, and they'll help support other products. And I don't know. So check out foolishit.com and dsupportonline.com. I wanted to mention them because it's
very good,
great stuff. It's Patch Tuesday.
Oh, again.
It is. Patch Tuesday, guys. Don't forget to patch your computers. It looks like there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 critical updates, 2 important updates for clients, and 2 critical updates for the servers. And these are everything from, hey, .NET. .NET, a kernel vulnerability, messaging queue, a FAT vulnerability and FAT32 disk partition driver that could allow elevation of privilege. I don't know what that it would do. FAT32. But yeah, so it's Patch Tuesday, guys. Go ahead and do that. And it sounds like it's going to be a bit bigger because I guess the other thing is that Oracle also releases their patches quarterly, and that happens to fall at the same time. So you guys are going to get some, if you're doing any kind of patching, prepare. Release the hounds, because it sounds like they're going to be kind of a big one.
Nice.
Good old Patch Tuesday. Other stuff that I come across this week, just some, Dropbox has been hacked. Actually, what it says, this website says that Dropbox, this is from securitywatch.pcmag, it says Dropbox says not hacked, urges two-factor authentication. So, like most of the vulnerabilities that have happened around lately, and I don't want to put in like the Target one and because those are credit card ones, so that's not really what they are. But so what happens is Dropbox says they themselves have not been hacked, but what happened was is that usernames and passwords, you know, when you use your same username and you use the same password, say I use mobando as my username and I use monkey123 as my password, well, now I use that across to some other sites. Well, what happens is those sites were compromised, and then Dropbox was compromised because I use the same password on Dropbox. So Dropbox is saying they themselves weren't hacked, so the data was safe, but the problem is that they used the same authentication. So they're saying an unknown individual posted hundreds of usernames and passwords allegedly belonging to Dropbox accounts on text sharing site like Pastebin on Monday. So this would have been yesterday. Pastebin user says the sample was a tiny fraction of the list consisting of as many as 7 million compromised Dropbox accounts. There's a way to turn on two-factor authentication. If you have not done that with Dropbox, I highly recommend it. With that, it's really easy to do. If you have an iPhone, Actually, if an iPhone, there is a couple other products that I don't know of that will do two-factor authentication. The reason, as opposed to on Android, get the Google Authenticator for your two-factor authentication. I don't know what there is on iPhone. If anybody has any suggestions on those, you can let me know or let us know. I saw this. This was something I wanted to bring up last time, but we ran out of time. There's a new Kickstarter out there called Matchstick. And it's like Google, the Chrome thing. What is that called? Plugs in the HDMI?
Chromecast.
Chromecast, there it is. So this is called Matchstick, and it's a streaming stick built on Firefox. And what they're saying is this is going to work. I mean, it had a $100,000 goal. It has 15 days to go, and it's already at $365,000. What it's saying is that Matchstick is a small Wi-Fi connected HDMI stick that plugs in your HD TV monitor, and it allows you to stream and interact with your favorite stuff. And it says movies, TVs, games, and more. So I don't know if it's going to be just a one-to-one thing, like no matter what you're watching on, say, Firefox, you can stream to that, or what you're looking on. It does say things like video, music, and gaming. So I don't know what they mean by gaming, if you can actually post stuff, but it looks like there is an app for Matchstick, and then you can go and you can install things, and they have Vimeo, YouTube, ESPN, Spotify. So you use the app on your phone for Matchstick and install basically plugins, and then you can push it out that way. And I'm assuming they're going to do the same thing for probably the Firefox browser on tablets and stuff. But it's called Matchstick, and it looks good. I ordered one. I actually ordered two of them just to see. They'll come in if you pledge $34, estimated 2015, February of 2015. So I'll get mine in February, but I'd be interested in checking it out and see what it's going to do.
That sounds interesting.
I mean, you know, it's going to give Chrome a run for the Chromecast, a run for its money, but you know, competition is good.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I have Chromecast, I have Roku, and I got the apps on my Blu-ray player, my TV. I never use them. Very rarely.
Yeah. I use a Chromecast every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, I got it just, it was cheap, you know, and it worked well. I mean, and it's been upgraded since. I, you know, kind of want to try it out since, you know, they've added more apps, but I haven't messed with it, though.
Yeah, I haven't. I use it, like I said, I don't use it as much as I thought I would. But that's okay.
See, I have my laptop upstairs that I use probably more than anything. It's connected to my TV, so I can, yeah, have a 32-inch TV, so I can do anything there. So.
Well, and I've got my Raspberry Pi, which is running my Raspbian MC. So it's my, you know, it's not Plex, so it's my media server, and mm-hmm. That ties into my NAS over here. And I don't use it as much. You know, every now and then I'll put on, you know, maybe I'll look up like greatest baseball plays or something like that, and YouTube, and that I'll put up on the TV so we all can see it. But I don't, you know, that's, our Xbox is hooked up to the TV, and that's what we've been using, you know, for our, you know, Hulu and Netflix and stuff. But, so we'll see. I mean, you know, it looks like it's a good thing, and, you know, really taking it, you know, taking these to conferences or something like that, that'd be a great way to be able to, you know, spread some media around. But, so, I wanted to bring that to you guys.
Yeah, cool.
This one here kind of... I'm bringing this one up, and it's going to be kind of an interesting topic. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is because I work for two of the companies I work for, and actually one is the one that they have the FileMaker program on. It is owned by, and most of the employees there, there's one male now, but all the other ones are females, and these are very strong females. Another company that I work for also is owned by a female. And I took my daughter with me, and we actually visited both sites because I wanted her to see what these sites were like and meet these owners. Because my daughter's a very – and Tim, I would assume that – I think that our daughters would probably be really close in this. They're very independent, and they're very strong.
I agree, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And what I mean by that is not necessarily because they both play softball. They're physically strong, but they have they've got a can-do attitude. Like, there's no reason that they couldn't do anything that a guy or a boy could do.
Nobody's telling her what to do, and she doesn't care what you think. I mean, speaking for my kid, she does not care.
Right.
She's going to do whatever she wants.
And my daughter's the same way. And so when this article came out, it kind of struck me it kind of struck me, struck a chord with me. It says that, so this is the CEO of Microsoft, and this would have been, this was either last week or the week before last. He was asked after giving a presentation, he was asked by a lady who is the, so she's the, she is at the, oh, she's actually on the Microsoft board member. She asked him,
This wasn't a customer calling over the complaint.
No, no. So she asked him, what advice would he give to women who aren't comfortable in asking for a raise?
And this made all the news, too, by the way.
Right, right. And he said, it's not really about asking for a raise, but knowing and having faith that the system will give you the right raise. The system, and he says, the system hasn't done a good job of addressing the pay gap thus far, but hey, there's always karma. And so this made headlines because he said, you know, essentially, there, you know, women your raise
should,
is
women,
is
women shouldn't ask for raises.
Pardon me?
Didn't he say that women should not ask for raises?
Yeah, it kind of came across that way. Right. Like, and you know, it says that. So it struck me as it kind of, like I said, I kind of got taken back by this because this was an interesting thing because we're fighting in the tech industry. You know, there's not a lot of females in the tech industry. They says that they, it says, women make up 29% of its global workforce for Microsoft, the tech sector, sorry, 29%. So there's a 70-30 balance right now of male versus female in the tech industry. And yet I work with these two customers and who are both very strong women and they have very strong female employees and my daughter is very strong. And I have no idea if we have any female listeners or not. If you are a female listener and you listen to...
I'm thinking about agreeing with what he said, and then we'll know exactly how many female listeners we have.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm posted in
it. I would also be very curious.
Just
because
listen to that video. You'll get everything.
I would have to assume it skews heavily male, but I would also be very interested in knowing what our demographics are.
You know, I can play stuff on here now. And
everything. Oh, do you? So you have the audio for that? I mean, it's a two-minute video.
I'm not sure if you'll hear it. Did you just hear it? I mean, I went to.
I heard something.
I heard something.
Yeah, you will hear it. Is it? You think it'd be okay to play? Or
sure.
Let me just. I'll just a little bit of it, and it'll pick up everything.
Microsoft is under fire for telling women not to ask for a raise. Bad idea. But now, as Kristen Scovira shows us what he said they should do instead, that's got women's rights groups right here in Colorado fighting back.
It's not really about asking for the raise, but knowing and having faith that the system will actually give you the right raises as you go along. That's good karma. It'll come back.
Waiting for karma to get a raise? That's the comment that has Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella backpedaling now after suggesting women in the workplace sit quietly by and hope for the best.
That's the kind of person that I want to trust. That's the kind of person that I want to really give more responsibility to.
The remarks, he said them to a room filled with female professionals at the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women, and once they hit the internet, the video went viral.
When I heard it, I likewise was shocked.
Linda Merrick is the National Executive Director at 9to5, a Denver-based organization dedicated to women's issues.
Saying that women don't need to ask for raises and should just trust the system are completely out of touch with the reality that is faced by most women in the workplace.
And that reality is women on average are making less than their male counterparts, raise or no raise. Recently, comedian Sarah Silverman's Equal Payback Project made headlines on the issue, challenging women to close the gender pay gap.
Women make up almost half the working population, yet we typically earn just 78 cents to every dollar a man makes in almost every profession.
Since the story broke, critics are looking at Microsoft itself and citing the lack of women working at the tech company.
Only 29% of the Microsoft workforce and in the higher paid technical, engineering, and management positions, only 17% of those positions are filled by women.
Merrick says women make up the majority of minimum wage earners and experience both overt and covert discrimination, like the lack of family-friendly policies. She says reformed legislation is the only way we'll see equal pay.
Let me get this straight. I'm getting hot over here. He's telling us to sit back. It'll come along when it needs to because
just wait your
all
turn.
Accomplishments come by people doing nothing.
especially, I mean, he's a CEO, so I find it hard to believe that, you know, he did nothing. But he is backpedaling a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
And don't think this is the last we're going to hear about it, this particular issue. So she mentioned that maybe you should try to support your legislation, a bill called the Paycheck Fairness Act that would allow for stricter enforcement of existing equal pay laws. So
there are things you can do.
There you go.
So it's, yeah, and it's, so he tweeted later on saying, this is his tweet saying, Marie asked me what advice I would offer women who are not comfortable asking for pay raises. I answered that question completely wrong. Without a doubt, I wholeheartedly support programs at Microsoft and in the industry that bring more women into technology and close the pay gap. I believe men and women should get equal pay for equal work. And when it comes to career advice on getting a raise when you think it's deserved, Maria's advice was the right advice. If you think you deserve a raise, you should just ask. So he took some heat over this comment.
Oh, yeah. If it made national news, I heard it on the radio coming in from work the other day.
There's nothing here.
Yeah.
There's nothing to the story.
Stupid.
Some guy. Oh, God, you know, he's stupid. Bob, get this.
Just happened to be a CEO of Microsoft.
You know what? Some guy was asked a question, and he answered it wrong. Did the person, and I didn't hear the audio, I mean, but I'm reading all the stories, and I'm seeing the same thing over and over again. She didn't ask, should women not be paid the same? She didn't ask, should women ask for raises or not ask for raises? You know, the question was, what would you tell women who are I would read that as anybody who is uncomfortable asking for a raise. That was the question. It was not dealing with whether they should or should not get raises. It's how they should deal with how they feel about asking for the raise. Okay, and I suppose maybe his answer was just really weird. But I think that he addressed that. Where in the answer does it say that they shouldn't ask for raises? You see what I'm saying? The question doesn't have anything to do with whether women should or should not be paid the same. It was about how they feel about asking for the raise. I think this whole thing got really twisted up.
You might be right. I need to listen to it again.
Yeah. No, I'm just, that's just what I'm, and I didn't hear it. That's just what I'm reading. I'm not defending him, and I don't defend the position that women should make less than men, but I really, really hate these news stories that somewhere they strike a nerve because somebody read it wrong or heard it wrong, and then it turns into this huge firestorm.
Well, yeah, because she says, what advice would he give to women who aren't comfortable asking for a raise? And he says it's not about asking, but knowing and having faith that the system will give you a raise at the right time. Well, that's like...
That addresses your comfort level, and now you feel comfortable, and now you will go and you'll ask for the raise, or you will subconsciously present yourself as a person who should be getting a raise because you're not making enough. Okay, and
you're already dealing with a topic that already has some heat underneath it. You know, so to answer the question of question he was asked to, in my opinion, for him to say,
he should have talked about Windows 10.
Yeah, I mean, because for him to come out and basically say, just wait, whatever, you know, if you're working hard enough and good enough, then you will get a raise based on that, not necessarily, you know, anything else. And which is fine. I don't want to put my foot so far into my mouth here, but you know, I think there should be equality. I'm very much for that. I've got a daughter who is going to grow up and be a very strong person, and I want equality for her just as much as I want equality for my son. But I think the way that he came across with it probably wasn't the best way to do it, and unfortunately, he stepped in it.
Nah, he just said something stupid.
Well, that's
I see a lot of smoke. I don't see any fire here. I think it just got blown up into a thing. I don't know.
Well, maybe our listeners will
can, or maybe, you know, he's a complete monster. He's a, you know,
could be a monster.
Not like me and Microsoft are like this or anything. You know, I'm gonna install my Windows 10. I'm gonna start talking about this guy.
There you go.
On the servers, it's gonna flash like Christmas up there. We've got him. Black vans are pulling up.
Black vans.
Guess what? I'm not even here.
Booyah. I had some time in the car today. quite a bit of time, actually, about 3 hours round trip for a job.
Because it's working so well now.
Yes, because now it actually drives. I can actually drive just fine, which in itself is a blessing. I listen to it's a new website that I heard of, and it's called the Itty Bitty Security Podcast. And I want to get this lady. Her name is Teresa Hummel, and she does a podcast on security. And these are and the reason it's called Itty Bitty Security Podcast is because these podcasts are only like 6 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes long. I think the most the longest one I heard was 15 minutes long. She has 16 episodes out there, and they're things like kids and social media, what to back up, how to phone scams. Backing up your photos, plugins, extensions for your web browser, like really good, like life tips on how to use a computer, and they're minutes long. So I really, if you have a 7-minute commute to work, you can listen to one of her podcasts on the way there. Itty Bitty Security Podcast. It's really good. I liked what she had to say. I'm gonna get a hold of her and see if maybe we can have her on the show. She'd be interested in coming onto the show.
Did you post that on Google Plus? Because I listened to it. I don't know where I did. I know I listened to at least one episode.
Actually, she called into the Mike Tech Show.
Oh, that's where I recognize.
I want to give props to Mike Smith for that on the Mike Tech Show. But she did call in and mention that, and that's where I thought I'm going to listen to that, and it was actually it's really good. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's right size. I mean, it's not like this monstrosity that we have. That it's like we're selling this thing by the pound.
Right. All right.
What an analogy.
I'll check this out. Thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's really good. We have two emails before we sign off for the day. This one's really, really good.
The funny one.
I'm not gonna say it.
All right. So this one, the subject of this one is I have sore ribs and a fine to pay. It says, "Good day, Geeksters. This is Gary from Down Under, and due to the time difference, I usually listen to the show on my podcast app while driving in between jobs or after work. I happened to be driving while I listened to episode 133 when Mitch made the infamous interruption. I was laughing so hard that my eyes started to water, ribs are aching, and I drove straight through a red light camera. I know I got caught because the flash went off behind me. I just wanted to know, does the Geeksters cover listeners with some sort of Tim Bauermeister laughter insurance? I love the show, guys. Keep it real."
Now, we got to backtrack what we're referring to. You were talking about you were doing that training with Nick. And
right.
And but you kept referring to using my name. And I'm thinking, I was there? It was funny.
Right, because I was talking to Andy, because this was our last show. We had Andy and Alistair on.
Right.
From the Admin podcast.
And great show. Great guys.
That show was so much fun. Talking to one of them, and I can't remember which one, but we were talking about D7, and I kept referring to Nick as Mitch. And right in the middle of the conversation, Mitch says, "What? I was there? Or which Mitch? Are you talking about me, Mitch?" And it was so funny. So if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to episode 133, find it. And Gary, to answer your question, I don't think we have Tim Bauermeister laughter insurance.
We didn't
do that copay.
No, but for a small fee, I will show up to the hearing, and I will defend you. However,
in Australia,
there's no guarantees as to what will happen. For that. And
well, Gary lives in Australia, right?
I'll fly.
Okay, I'm just
call they a friend. Got boats. It's amazing. In this day and age, the travel options available.
Will Gary have to pay for
it's not like everybody drives with a broken power steering pump everywhere they go. I expect your arms to be like really big too. Like you should just let it go and just work them guns.
Rawr. All right. This last email. This one is from Raymond, and it's kind of a long one, so bear with me here. And then I'll follow up because he does have quite a bit to say. So he says, "Martin, I wanted to write you about a couple things from episode 131, and maybe it includes things from 132. So I'm sending it to you because I'm probably going to rant, although I'll try to avoid that. And secondly, because I'm going to use a script as a text file, and I trust my code to run in my production environment, but I've never tested it outside of that, so I do not know if it would break someone else's. And I'm just not comfortable yet enough sharing my code in a wide public viewing. As you talked about this AD Tidy program. So that's the program that will go out, and I used it to find how many computers had not logged in say, a month, and then automatically disable in Active Directory. Which I think is neat. I might also have to go over it sometime to see if there are other things I would like to use from it. However, I've been doing my best to shove as much of my life as possible in PowerShell scripts. I'm a system admin slash engineer, whatever you want to call me, for a company that loves to have minimal IT staff. So I have over 7,000 computer accounts, 5,000 user accounts in my domain, and we have on-site Exchange, Link, and lots of VMware, about 40 hosts through North America, including some in Moses Lake, Wisconsin, and that's probably as close as to you as we get. So I have lots of Microsoft servers and a handful of Linux ones where it fits. Oh, I'm also inherited a lot of Citrix stuff too, or I'm the only one who stood that part up, and I can't remember. I'm a big fan of just using what works. If it fits my technology ADD, that's why I run around getting random IT certificates. Anyway, so I need to get a hold of a computer accounts after them being ignored for about a decade. By the way, I inherited this world. I didn't create it. So just another excuse to create yet another PowerShell script. I created my create inactivity systems report.ps1 script. It works by taking parameters like any other PowerShell commandlet, although it has a lot of them. In my case, I give it the criteria I want, and I have it run on scheduled tasks on the 1st and the 15th of the month because of my time frames for actions are 15 days apart. I'll explain that later. When this script runs, it creates an email and it sends to a few people with all the information, as well as an HTML file that it dumps on a web server, and then things are kept there for archival purposes so we can go back and see what then happened. I'm stopping the email there because what happens is he writes this huge long PowerScript command thing. And I don't use PowerScript, so I did talk with him, asking him if I could put that on there. He's actually taking a VM test today, he said. He does his Thursday at 9 a.m. If he's passed that, then he's going to go over the script again, or his VMware VCP test, and do betterment documentation, and then give us some stuff that we can share with our listeners. He says right now he's hyper-focused on that, and then we'll have to work on, then he'll work on his MCSE for 2012 R2, and then get some other things out of the way. So he'll be giving us more information and hopefully some PowerScript shells that if any listeners out there are interested in, he'll have those for you. So later on in the email, he goes on to say, totally switching gears, you guys on episode 132, I believe, talked about Windows 8/9. I was one of those people that would not move from XP to Vista when it came out. I wouldn't do it, fought every moment I could. When Windows 7 came out, something in me clicked where I understood I can't stand still, or I'm gonna be that guy spouting Windows 95 and NT are all we need, when in comparison, they're just junk to what we have. I was also help desk at the time and got tasked with not only the migration of XP to Windows 7, but to find something outside Norton Ghost to use for it. I ended up using the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit because it was free, and we were able to fully migrate with minimal heartache. The point of that was that I learned when Microsoft releases to a new OS, I should just use it. So when 8 came out, I jumped over to force myself to into it. I did the same with 8.1, and I'm sure it'll do the same for 9. With all that said, I'm fine with 8.1. I found I don't really use the start button. I've gotten used to just the Windows key and type what I want. Or I have a PowerShell function to launch what I need because I always have at least one PowerShell window open. I've also found that Windows 8 with SSD is a lot faster than Windows 7, but I'm getting to the point where even in Windows, GUI doesn't mean much to me. All right, like I said, I just ranted out a bunch of random, pardon that. I do get interrupted a lot when I attempt to anything, but I just really wanted to send out something out. Also, thanks for the show and all the chatter. I love it. Helps me learn where to tweak my ears sometimes to hear about new things coming or other things I was just unaware of. By all means, contact me if you ever think I can help out, and I'll see what I can do. Thanks, Raymond.
Get him on the show. Get him on the show.
Yeah, so we'll get Raymond on the show because he wrote us a whole lot of stuff. And like I said, that's only probably a quarter of the email that he sent me. it is long.
You sell this thing by the pound.
Oh, yeah, I'm tired. My jaws hurt now. But that's really cool, Raymond. We are definitely will get you on the show. We'd like to hear more about PowerShell. It's something that I know I should learn. I don't use it. And I know that it would probably be in my best interest to learn it as things move on to more and more PowerShell. And in the same way that on my Linux box, I can drop out to an interface, GUI text interface, and I can do some more stuff that I couldn't do necessarily in the GUI, or a lot simpler, a lot faster. Probably with PowerShell, I could do the same thing that you could do as well. Well, I'm tired of talking.
Good show.
I'm tired of listening.
Well.
Well, we covered a lot of territory today.
We did. Fun. So you guys can go back and check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did cover a lot. So, Tim, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
I'm Tim Bauer, Marshall G+. You can find me there.
And, Mitch, if you want to get a hold of us to send us emails like Raymond and Gary did?
Geeksters@podnuts.com or send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. That is 7076-763-688.
Very nice. And, guys, Christmas is coming up. My wife's birthday just passed. Podnuts.com/Amazon. You can get that heat thingy that Tim talked about. Something.
Right.
Hot air workstation.
You can get that there. Don't forget to support our other shows, Android App Addicts, Health Nuts, Call That Girl, Linux for the Rest of Us. Jeff Halish has been doing a great job with PodNuts and PodNuts Daily. Oh, my gosh. So check out all those other shows on the PodNuts Network. My name is Martin Obando. You can get me at martin@obandocomputing.com. You can find me on Google+. Just check out M. Obando. My Obando Computing one is there, but I don't really do much with that. But my M. Obando account is the one you want to follow if you want to do that. Guys, thanks for coming and hanging out with us, Tim and Mitch. It's great to see you guys again. And we will probably hopefully see each other in like 2 weeks at Ohio Linux Fest. It's coming up soon. So we'll be there. We shouldn't miss any shows. I'll be leaving on Thursday, coming back on a Monday. So unless I'm still recovering from Ohio Linux Fest, I don't see why we couldn't do a show on Tuesday. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Have a good fiscal week, and don't forget to be gruntled. All right, guys. Thanks.
PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.